Last week we finished sort of a cursory look at Tfilat Chana, the beginning of Perek Bet, and we started reading the next part of the story, which is Psukim Yud Aleph and Yud Bet, an introduction to the contrast between Shmuel as a young boy living in the temple under Eli's tutelage, and Bnei Eli, Chofni and Pinchas, who are described as Bnei Belial lo yadu et Hashem. If anybody didn't get this source page from last week, then take... It's the same one I gave out...
There should be a couple.
Here, take the whole thing out. It's the same one I had given out at the end of last year, but if you didn't get it, okay, get another copy. Correct. That's where we got up to. Bnei Belial lo yadu et Hashem. We spent a few minutes talking about lo yadu et Hashem, this phrase that they did not know God, whatever that what that means, suggesting that not only does it have a sort of a religious connotation or theological connotation, but that it is understood by the Nevi'im as a kind of indictment of a behavior moral degradation.
Mistreating
others. Lo yadu et Hashem. And then, I don't know how far we read. How far did we read?
I don't think we got very far.
We did not.
Okay, good.
Because we spent time on Tfilat Chana.
Right, we spent that. Last week was Tfilat Chana. Today is we're going to learn through, again, as we do many times, go through it once and then twice and then try to understand it and go through it again. That's why
I was going to ask one question before we move on from Bnei Belial. Is that one of the names of Sutton, Belial, or something like that?
Now you've stumped me.
That's
something else. That's something else. That's something else completely. That's Zubal.
That
is Zubal. That comes from the word Baal, and
Zubal.
Beelzebub is Baal's Vuv. That's a whole.
Yeah, I think so.
A whole definition.
But so does God.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. Pasuk Yud Gimel is where I think we are up to, which is a more detailed description of the behavior of Bnei Eli. Umishpat haKohanim et ha'am. The Perek, chapter 2, 13.
Okay.
Perek Bet, Pasuk Yud Gimel. We can start one pasuk earlier. We can start from Yud Bet. Bnei Eli, Bnei Belial, lo yadu et Hashem. These two sons of Eli, Chofni and Pinchas, described as Bnei Belial, lo yadu et Hashem. Mishpat haKohanim et ha'am. Mishpat normally means the law. In this case, it means behavior. In other words, this is how they would routinely treat the people. Kol ish zoveach zevach. Person would come with a korban. Uva nar haKohen kivashal basar. Doesn't even give them a name. Calls them Nar HaKohen. Chofni and Pinchas. Nar HaKohen. Right? The young, I guess the contrast, Shmuel, who is described in Pasuk Aleph as a Na'ar. So Chofni and Pinchas also described as a Na'ar. But
they're probably middle-aged, right?
Well, it's not clear how old they are, but they're certainly old enough to behave...
No better.
Old enough to behave like...
Bnei HaKohen.
Rabbi Art Scroll or whatever it is. He translates it as the Kohen's attendant.
Nar is not.
But it's
I think we're talking about Chofni Pinchas. If we're not talking about Chofni Pinchas, we're certainly talking about those under the guidance and direction of Chofni Pinchas, because this whole thing is an indictment of Chofni Pinchas. We'll see that very clearly.
Okay. Just throwing it out there, not saying that's right.
Uvan na hakohen as the meat is being cooked. V'hamazleg shlosh hashinayim biyado. With the three-pronged fork. It's a very important piece of information that we need to know, that this fork in his hand has three prongs to it. Shlosh, that was a sarcastic statement, by the way. In case you didn't hear the sarcasm. V'hamazleg shlosh hashinayim.
Significant about it.
We were waiting.
It's so significant. There's even a picture of it.
No way.
It says significant. There's even a picture of it. I have a picture of it today.
It looks like a pitchfork.
It's a pitchfork. That's exactly what it is.
Isn't what Neptune had a free?
That's exactly what Neptune had.
Okay.
Not that there's any connection. Trident.
Yes.
Three prong. Right? It's even a picture of it.
Yeah.
Mazleg Shlosha Shinaim.
We have a big hunk of meat with
it. The hero of the story. Mazleg Shlosha Shinaim Biyado, the three pronged fork. We take this fork and stab it into the cauldron, or the pot, or whatever the meat was cooking in. Kol ashi yaleh mazleg. Whatever the fork would pierce, as far as the meat goes, yikach hakohen bo. That would be the portion that the Kohen would take. Mm-hmm. Take his fork, stick it into the pot, boom. Pull it out. Oh, that's my steak dinner. That's how they would behave towards all of Israel who would come to Shiloh. Big pot of cooking meat, come over with the fork, stab it into the pot. That's my portion. Understand?
It's before they did the carbon, right?
Well, we're going to get to that issue in a moment, that it's before they brought the carbon part of the carbon, which is problematic in its own right. Pasuk hasn't told us that. But just the behavior by itself of sticking this fork into the pot and taking the portion is already the beginning of a problem. First of all, kacha ya'asu l'chol Yisrael, that's how they treated all of Israel, already tells you that this is not standard operating procedure. There's a halacha called matnot kuhuna. Mm-hmm. All the portions of the korbanot that were given to the kohanim. Halacha is the balabas, the balabai, the owner of the korban, has to give it to the kohen. Because he has the right to choose which kohen to give it to.
So he's the kohen giving it to him.
Right. So for example, any of the matnot kuhuna would be truma, masa, truma, any of the portions of the animals, whether it be korban shlamim, right? The balabas who owns the korban, he's the one bringing the korban. The kohen is acting on his behalf to bring the offering on the mizbeach. Right? The balabait says, okay, here's the portion the Torah obligates me to give to you, etc. It comes along the kohen. He's not waiting for that. Takes his fork, stabs it into the pot. That's my portion. Gets better. Gam b'terem yaktirun et ha-chelev. Before the chelev is that part of the fat of the animal that's brought on the mizbeach as a korban, which is a prerequisite in the process of the korban itself. B'terem yaktirun et ha-chelev uva nar ha-kohen ve'amar le'ish ha-zaveach t'na basar litzlot la-kohen. This now would come, say to the person bringing this korban, give me meat. I want meat. Where give me my
was that meat. After he did the pitchfork or before?
This is all describing the process. It's all integrated. There isn't really a chronology here. It's a behavioral pattern that's being described. But not basal litzlot l'kohen. Understand the significance. Where is the meat?
In a pot.
In a pot.
Cooking.
In a pot, it's cooking. He comes along and stabs it, and he says, he wants
give
it.
Give me meat.
Litzlot. What's litzlot?
It's to roast.
To roast.
Yeah.
Says, I don't want my portion cooked. You know what happens to meat when you cook it?
Gets smaller.
Gets smaller, and it gets soggy, and it's not the same quality as a good barbecued steak. He says, I'm going to wait for you to cook my meat. I don't want it roasted.
Right.
I'll just take it. V'lo yikach mimcha basar muvushal. I'm not waiting for this thing to be cooked. Ki imchai. I want it raw. Because I want to cook it myself. The last person, by the way, who didn't have the patience to wait till the meat was cooked and insisted on having it raw was Esav.
Right.
It comes in from the field, dying of hunger, says to Yaakov, who's cooking up some soup, lentil soup, Nazid Hashem, Ha'aliteini. I must have shared this with you once before. Liteini na min adom adom hazeh, says Ace of Tiako. Translate.
Please From this red.
I'm not worried about what the red hadom hadom is. The red lentil soup.
It's now.
Okay, but ha'aliteni is an interesting word. You translate it as "please give me." Ha'aliteni doesn't mean to give. Ha'aliteni means pour it down my throat.
Oh. I heard the word. Where are you that from, though?
Because that's the connotation of ha'aliteni is to swallow, like to just devour it.
Okay.
Now, the bigger mystery is this word.
Please.
Since when does Esav use the word please?
He's really hungry.
He's really hungry, so he says please.
He wants it right
so
away.
So Rashi says, what does Naam mean? He wants it now, so he says, please. When Yaakov comes in with the, disguised as Esav to steal the bracha, and he says to Yaakov, and he says to Yitzchak, to Hakerna, right? This is, or I brought you the food, now please come and eat it. So Rashi immediately says that Esav never used the word na. Right? That's not Esav style. So Yaakov picks up, so Yitzchak picks up that this is something. Something's wrong here. How does the Esav come along and say, nah, please? Ein na el lashon bakasha. So the answer is that the word nah has really two meanings. We translate it usually as nah meaning please, nah, bakasha. But the truth is that it has a completely different connotation in Chumash. So Ibn Ezra and Rav Hirsch and many of the Mephoshim translate it in the context of Esav as give it to me now. But how does na come to word now? Maybe the N-A and N-W. I don't know. But how does na come to the word now? The answer is that there's another pasuk in the Torah altogether which shares the same word by the Korban Pesach. Korban Pesach, we are told, had to be eaten.
Had to be roasted.
And the pasuk says, Al Tochlu mimenu na uvashel mirvushal amayim ki im sli esh vasho al kraav yocholen. And there all the Mephoshim translate this as don't eat the Korban Pesach cooked in water. Korban Pesach was not allowed to be cooked, right. It had to be roasted. Ki im sli esh. And what does the word na mean? Al tochlu mimenu. Na.
So that means now.
It means raw.
Oh, you mean in the form that it is? In the natural form, you're saying.
Al tochlu mimenu na. Can't eat it pre-cooked, undercooked, raw. Or cooked in water, it has to be?
Roasted.
What did Esav say to Yaakov? Haliteni?
Na.
Na. Give it to me?
Raw.
I'm not waiting. He comes along Avraham Yaakov and he says, what are you talking about? It's not ready yet. It's not. I've got to prepare it. Says Esav, Haliteni, nah. I want it
raw.
Now. Which makes more sense in the context of the whole conversation between Esav and Yaakov. Yaakov says, what about tomorrow? Esav says, I'm going to die. What do I worry about tomorrow? I'm hungry. I want it
now.
Even if it's not ready. That's exactly what Bnei Eli say to these people coming in with their korbanot. Lo yikach mecha basar mevushal ki imchai. I don't want to wait for it to be cooked. I want it now, raw, chai, Esav style. You understand the irony of talking about a korban in a behavioral pattern that matches Esav. The whole context of that moment when Esav sold the birthright, which according to Chazal was the role of the Beis HaMikdash and the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, and here comes Bnei Eli in the Avodah and treating it like Esav. Wow. The irony is the tragedy of it is Yomer Elav Ha'ish. Now, here's a paradigmatic dialogue. It's not a person, this is an ongoing routine that happens on a regular basis. Here was the response of the Ish. Let me first bring the chalef. But when I'm finished with the chaylev, you can have kasher tavin afshecha, which means to your heart's content. Mm-hmm. To your sat, right? Take whatever you want, but at least let me bring the chaylev. The amar lo, or the amar lo, with an aleph or a vav. Either he said to him, or he said no. Atatite, you'll give it to me now. Na, chai, raw, now. Ve'im lo lakachti b'chozka.
I'll take it.
And if not, you know what? This pitchfork can be used for multiple purposes. If not, I take it myself. By force. Yeah.
With force.
By force. Kacha yasu. Chatehi chatat hanarim gdola meod et pnei Hashem. This chet of the Na'arim was great before God. Ki ni'atzua anashim et minchat Hashem. These people were causing the mincha, the offering of God, to be despised. The whole context of the avoda, which was supposed to be uplifting and spiritual and bringing people closer to God, all they were doing was making the entire context of the avoda and the mikdash, the mishkan, something to be despised, something to be
avoided.
Go back to what we said at the beginning of the sefer about how Elkanah's loyalty to the mishkan, because most people aren't coming. Right. This is not a mishkan that is inviting. This is not where people want to be. If the first thing you do is you walk through the door and you're greeted by a chafni pinchas with a three-pronged fork sticking it into the pot. Right. That's how you treat everybody who walks into the mishkan. Not only that.
What's the word na'atzu?
Na'atz is to... I mean, it's almost like to blaspheme.
Here it says
but
dishonored.
Dishonored or to despise. It's a hard word to translate. Kol minatz, the miraglim are described as minatze Hashem. Mm-hmm. Dishonor God or despise God. There's a Gemara that says that if you make a bracha over tray food, you're minatze Hashem.
Oh, my right? God.
It's the chutzpah of it. The chutzpah, the perversion of it is it's Gemara brachas.
How do we know that mazleg, which we use this word in common Hebrew, is a pitchfork?
It's a fork of some kind. Shalosh shinayim.
That says three.
It's
that word in common.
Most biblical words we still use in common modern Hebrew. It's modern Hebrew words that don't have a biblical source that are invented.
Right.
Biblical words.
That's where they start.
Biblical words. Biblical words. You'd be surprised what words in modern Hebrew have a biblical source. You'd be surprised. I was shocked the first time I read Sefer Yirmiyahu to discover that a modern word for a broom is a biblical word.
Matate.
Mem tet aleph tet aleph. Strange word. Right? It's a word in Sefer Yirmiyahu.
But it makes sense. I mean, once you look for biblical
that's
words,
sure, 100%.
That's where Ben-Yu
100%. I mean, there's so many modern Hebrew words that are not in Tanakh, because Tanakh is a limited language source. So we had to invent new words. But the words that sometimes words change meaning, that is true. Sometimes words can, over the course of time, change meaning. That's true in any language. As language develops, words today mean very different things than they did 20 years ago, 30 years ago, let alone 300 years ago. Right? So.
I would have changed the pitchfork.
Well, it's a fork, Adina.
A fork.
It says it has three prongs, and we know that a three
got nothing to do with Greek philosophy. It's a fork. Right, call it whatever you want. It's a fork of. It's a big enough fork to stick into a big pot
and get a big
chunk of meat. I call it whatever. It's a serving fork. It's a mazlek. There's another phrase in this paragraph that is really frightening, but dripping with meaning.
Just like the meat.
Right, just like the meat. Right, the reader, the listener. The Kohen would have understood the meaning of this phrase. The people reading, the Navi would have understood this phrase. We need to review a little Chumash before we can understand the meaning of this phrase. But this, when the Balabas says to the Kohen, let me bring the Chaylev first, And then you can take katayak tirun kayam achelev, and then kach lecha kasher ta'aven nafshecha.
Tava
means appetite.
Right.
To your heart's appetite. To your heart's content.
Right.
To the modern expression would be eat to your heart's content. Right? Sounds like a very nice thing. It sounds like a very nice thing, but
Tavon.
Right. Very nice thing. Not the kind of thing you want to describe a korban as. Take a look in Devarim Perek Yud Bet. One of the nice things, Dina, one of the nice things about this Tanakh, in addition to the
ends,
is that you have a little thing. I think of you every time I use that.
Thank you.
Perek Yud Bet is a beginning of Parashat Re'eh. It's an important perek for us altogether because it's the source. We actually read through parts of this perek at length in Sefer Shoftim because it's the source of the idea of one Mishkan, one Mikdash, that you can't have a proliferation of temples everywhere. It's sort of the first step towards absolutely. The first step towards idolatry is this notion of proliferation of temples and altars in multiple places, right? What we call bamot, or what the Tanakh calls bamot. And here in Perek Yud Bet, you have this prohibition against doing similar types of things. The beginning of Perek Yud Bet, just to give you a context, the Torah starts, Ela chukim ha-mishpatim asher tishmerun la'asot ba'aretz asher Hashem natan lecha Hashem elokeha batecha l'rishta. These are the laws when you enter into the land of Israel. Suddenly the things are going to change. And the first thing that's going to change is, Abed ta'abdun et kol ha-mekomot asher avdu sham ha-goyim. All those places, all those bamot, all those altars where the Gentiles, where the indigenous population worshipped idols and served their gods, they have to be destroyed. The land of Israel had to become an idolatry-free zone. We talked about that in Sefer Shoftim at length, the notion that there could be no memorials and museums to idolatry. It had to be removed from the land, lest it become a temptation. Kol ha-mekomot she'avdu sham ha-goyim asher atem yoshim otam et Eloheihem, al heharim aramim ve'al ha-gvot v'tachat kol etz ve'anan. Hills and valleys and trees, everything, because that's what paganism was about. That's what idolatry was about. Every five steps, you could build another temple or another altar, or every hill, because there was no central location. Monotheism and one mikdash are inherently connected. And you have one God, you have one place of avoda. You can't have multiple places of avoda, which is characteristic of idolatry. One of the major transitions and the destruction of the temple was the allowance for the creation of Bate Knesset, which you could do only because it's tefillah, not korbanot. We had this discussion a number of times. Then it goes to great lengths to describe how you'll destroy all these places. Skip there for a moment. And then Pasuk Hey, Ki Im, or end of Pasuk Dalet, Lo Tasun Ken Hashem Elokechem, you shall not do this to God, meaning you shall not build multiple places of service to God. One place that God will choose from amongst all of the tribes, there you will come with your offerings, there you will seek God's presence. One mikdash. And there, into that mikdash, you'll bring all your different types of sacrifices, and your nidarim, and your nidavot, and your bechor, and b'kor b'karchem, v'tzonchem, the firstborn, all of the different korbanot that exist within the context of the halacha of Sefer V'ikra, all brought to one place. V'achaltem sham lifnei Hashem elokechem, usmachtem b'chom mishlach etchem, atem uvatechem esher barachacha Hashem elokecha. Pasuk Chet, lo tasun kechol asher anachnu asim po hayom. You can't do what we do here today. This is the context in which we read these psukim in Shoftim. You can't behave as we behave today in the midbar, ish kol yashar beinav, each one doing their own thing. In the midbar, they could bring their own bamot. Because here too, for lo tamadat ela menucha ve'ela nachala asher Hashem lekachon neten lach, we haven't entered into the land of Israel. Once we enter into the land of Israel, however, then God will give you respite from all your enemies, you'll finish all your wars. Pasuk Aleph, Vayam makom sheyivchar Hashem elokechem b'lashaken shmosham, taviu et kol asher anachim mitzaveh etchem. One place to bring all of your korbanot, olotechem, zivchechem, asotechem, tumat yedchem, etc., etc.
When they were traveling together and they had a mishkan, how could they have
Why were they allowed to bring bamot?
Right.
Interesting question. Good question.
It's strange because I thought they were following.
If you'll forgive me for now, it'll take us off
okay.
topic.
All
right, it's tangential, right? For now, it'll take us off topic. But theoretically, in the midbar, they could bring bamot. Part of the allowance of bamot, actually, this is relevant. Part of the allowance of bamot was the fact that if you wanted to eat meat, you could only do so in the context of a sacrifice. There was no allowance for eating meat outside of the arena of a korban, at least so far. Now, the problem becomes, you came right at the right time. Right?
Always. Everything comes back to this.
Part of the issue is, however, that once they enter into the land of Israel, two things happen. One is you now have one mikdash and no longer allowed to bring bamot, one mishkan, or one permanent place for the mishkan. Part of the issue had to do with the fact that the mishkan was constantly moving. So if the mishkan was constantly moving, you couldn't create the sense of central place, and therefore bamot were also allowed because the mishkan was moving. But once the mishkan became stationary, bamot became a prohibited, sort of a tangential piece. But once that mishkan became permanent, and once there was no longer an allowance to build your own altars anywhere else, a second piece kicks in, which is you're now living in the land of Israel, north, south, east, to west. You can't go running to the Beis HaMikdash every time you want to have meat for dinner. Suzanne might say you should, but right? But you can't go running to bring a korban every time you want to have fleishes. So therefore, skip to the next paragraph, pasuk chaf. And you get to the following scenario. It's a phrase that appears earlier as well, but we'll do it here. Ki yarchiv Hashem elokecha et gvulcha. What happens when God will expand your borders? Kasher diber lach, as he promised to do. Ve'amarta ochla vasar. And now you come and you say, I want to eat meat. Ki ta'ave nafshecha le'achol basar. Because you have an appetite to eat meat.
I think teva can be translated differently.
Yes, but we're going to...
You were PC there.
I was very PC there, right? B'chol, says the Torah, b'chol avat nafshecha tochal basar. Eat to your heart's content. You want meat? Go for it. According to your heart's desire, your soul's yearning. However, ki yirchak mimcha makom ashivchar Hashem elokecha lusum shmo sham, the place that God has commanded you, the place that God has centralized for the place of avoda, is now far away. So what are you going to do? Says the Torah. V'zevachta mibukorcha u'mitzoncha, you can slaughter your own animals. Hashem natan lecha Hashem elokecha kasher tziviticha, you'll slaughter them as commanded. V'achalta b'sharecha, and eat the meat in your gates. It doesn't need to be a korban. Bechol avat nafshecha, according to your heart's desire. In other words, what is the Torah establishing? On the one hand, there's a prohibition against bringing a korban outside of the mikdash. That's called shchut echutz. Right. And the moment the Torah prohibits any kind of slaughter of a korban outside of the mikdash in the land of Israel, in the same breath, the Torah has to allow for non sacrificial meat, non-kodshim, what in the halacha is called, an interesting halachic term, all of korbanot, all of korbanot are referred to in the halacha as kodshim. And the word kodesh. Any kodshim outside of the mikdash is called shvutei chutz. Slaughter outside of the mikdash, korban outside of the context of the mishkan, that's the prohibition in Perek Yud Bet of Sefer Torah. In the same breath, the Torah has to allow what in the halacha is called chulin. And hence, by the way, all the laws of kashrus are in the tractate of the Mishnah referred to as Masechet Chulin. Right? From the word chol, kodesh, and chol. Chazal had a much more PC term for it than the Torah did. The Torah refers to chulin, meat that is non-sacrificial, as basar ta'ava.
Interesting.
Meat of
desire.
Right. To your heart's content. You want to eat meat, eat. But kodshim only in the Mishkan. That's a relevant halacha once you enter into the land of Israel. But you understand that the terminology the Torah sets out from the very beginning is that a korban is kodshim, is avoda, is a korban, is kodesh. Basar ta'aveh ka'cholavat nafshecha is precisely the Torah's term for meat of desire and not of sacrificial meat.
So was this announced to B'nai Israel after after they left Egypt, was this announced to them that you could not have?
In the Midbar, they could bring, if they wanted, they could bring, build their own bamot. That's what we talked about before. So this is relevant now in Devarim as they're entering into the land of Israel.
But this, obviously people knew this.
This is the mitzvah in the Torah. Now, come back to Shmuel. And we come back to the phraseology that the alabait of this korban uses to the kohen. How is this written? What the actual conversation was, I don't know, but how does the Navi write this conversation? Let me bring the chalev first. V'kach lecha kasher ta'aveh nafshecha. Then whatever part of the korban you want, you can have. Ka'achol aved ta'aveh nafshecha, as your heart desires. But the phraseology is remarkable, because what is the nuance in this phrase?
It's referring to what he's saying as chulin.
In other words, if you treat the korban as your own personal desire rather than avodas Hashem, then you transform it from kachim to chol, you desecrate it. It's precisely what these kohanim are doing. They're desecrating the entire operation, not only of the service to God, but how they're treating the people. And the terminology used is, this meat to you now becomes the equivalent of basar ta'ava, which is precisely the Torah's term for non-sacrificial meat. That's how far it's got.
These are kohanim.
These are,
you know what I'm saying? B'nei
Eli Chofniu Pinchas kohanim. These are like the equivalent of the Kohen Gadol, because Eli is the Kohen Gadol, but he's 90-something years old. So he's
certainly qualify
as Lo Yadu Hashem. It gets even better. We haven't even...
Better in
this whole parak is dripping with sarcasm, so it's really quite remarkable. All right, Pasuk Yud Chet. Remember how this paragraph began. Pasuk Yud Aleph was the contrast between Shmuel Na'ar Misharet Hashem, Bnei Eli Kohen, and Bnei Eli Chofni Pinchas. So I start out with this contrast between Shmuel on the one hand. Then I have from Pesukim Yud Bet through Yud Zayin a description of Chofni Pinchas and their behavior. And now we move on to continue in Pasuk Yud Chet. Everybody with me back in Shmuel Bet? Ushmuel, scene shifts. So from B'nai Eli and how they've treated, where they are treating everybody who walks into the Mishkan, we have the flip image. Now the scene is shifted to Shmuel. Misharet et Bnei Hashem, serving God. Na'ar, young man. Chagur efod bad, he's wearing an apron of bad kind of cloth. Umi'il katon taselo imo. He has this little coat, this little me'il, that his mother comes and brings him every year. Va'altalo miyamim yamima, every year she would come to the Mikdash, every year she would visit. And every year, Ba'alotat et Isha Lizboch et Zevach Hayamim, as she went to accompany her husband, who would come every year to bring his annual korban, she would come and she would bring him a little me'il. And next year, she'd bring him a bigger one. Right? She has these visitation rights. So she gets to visit him every year as he's growing up. And she brings him a little me'il. I guess he outgrows it every year. So every year, she brings him a new coat. It gets cold over there in Hare Ephraim in the middle of the winter. So every year, she brings him a new me'il.
Is it sort interesting that the Yomim and Yomim is the same language that was used before? With Penina.
From Ve'alaha Ishahu Me'iro Me'yamim Yamim Lishtachabot V'lisbach L'Hashem Mishloach. It's the same, because it's a reference to the same thing. Every year, Elkanah would come back to the Mishkan.
Explained in a different way, you mean. No.
But every year he would come back to the Mishkan. So that's exactly the reference back to that earlier verse. Every year he would come to the Mikdash.
Doesn't that raise a question why Elkanah would go? But before Shmuel, if he knew this was, he went every year, and Kofni and Pinchas are up to this behavior, what was he going every year for?
So that's what we said. If you go back to those opening psukim, right? That's exactly what it says. Go back to that opening pasuk Gimel. Perek Aleph Pasuk Gimel. Va'alah ha'ishahu me'iro me'amim yamima li'ishtachavot v'lisboch l'Hashem tzvot b'shilo v'sham shnei b'nei eli chofni u'finchas chonim l'Hashem. That's exactly what the Radak said. We explained that the fact that Elkanah's devotion was such that he would go to the Mikdash every year was not because Chofni and Pinchas were there, but despite the fact that Chofni and Pinchas were there. How many other people are running to Pesel Micha? Right, to Micha's Bet, which is 4 kilometers from here. Right, it's in Micha's in Har Ephraim. This is Shiloh's in Har Ephraim. Micha's around the corner. Micha's bed and breakfast is famous. Remember when we learned story of Pesel Micha and Sefer Shmuel? Everybody traveling through Har Ephraim ended up in his hotel. Where's the Mishkan? Nowhere to be mentioned. Not a surprise. This is Chofni Pinchas. Not a surprise that nobody's going to the Mishkan. How many people are going? A few, right? Elkanah and a few of his devotees, right? A few real loyalists. But the overall culture of the time is one in which the pervasive idolatry of Sefer Shoftim has to be seen against the backdrop of what's happening in the Mishkan. If your Mishkan or Makom Avodas Hashem is corrupt, and the places of Avodah Zarah, I have a hand of hospitality out to the people. Most of you people are ignorant enough that they're just going to go wherever they are greeted with a smile. It's a fact.
Well, it just shows you how important greeting somebody with a smile.
Oh, times have not changed. Times have not changed. Some things are universal and eternal. 100%.
Right.
Be that as it may.
I think I'd want to go to the Mishkan if that's what it was like to go up there.
100%. 100%. Translate this into there are a number of contexts in which we could translate this into the modern arena of Jewish life. You can use your imagination. And
this was also a problem at times of the Beit HaMikdash with the colony. I mean, this is not a
correct.
This is an ever recurring issue.
Beit HaMikdash was a little bit less problematic than the Mishkan, but ultimately the problem in the Mishkan was so pervasive, it was so deep rooted, that ultimately the only way to really solve this was to destroy the Mishkan. And that's what happens, right? This is Perek Aleph and Bet. Perek Gimel is the rise of Shmuel as a Navi. Perek Dalet is the destruction of the Mishkan. This isn't a sequence. Pasukav, Uverach, Eli et Elkanah et Ishto. So we're continuing this conversation about Shmuel. Eli gave a bracha to Elkanah and his wife. V'yamar, Yasem Hashem lecha zera min ha'isha azot tachat ha'she'ela asher sha'al la'Hashem. May God bless you with more children. You have lent this one to God. He's such a nachas kind. He's such a wonderful child. God should give you a bracha. You should have more children. This one that you've left with us is just a real source of nachas. No surprise. First of all, he was a wonderful child. And second of all,
he had a good gene pool.
Right? He had a good gene pool, but compared to his own children,
yes.
This is Shmuel is and the contrast is there intentional. כי פקד השם את חנה ותר ותלת שלושה בנים ושתי בנות ויגדל הנער ושמואל עם השם. And indeed, Hannah had other children, 3 sons, 2 daughters. In the meantime, Shmuel was being raised, Vayigdal Hanar Shmuel, he was being raised with God, Yim Hashem. So, of course, the big question is, in the behavior of Chofni and Pinchas, which are the kids? So we don't know anything about them. I mean, they're mentioned in Sefer Shmuel.
No, I'm saying Eli's.
Right. So, of Eli's children, all we know about are Chofni and Pinchas. We don't know that there are any other children.
No, but I'm saying somehow Eli was able to raise Shmuel, but he couldn't raise his own kids.
Correct. Well, so that's weird. That's no. Something we will come
well,
back to.
He's older. That works.
I'm not sure that Eli's age plays to his favor.
No.
In this particular case, I'm not sure that it plays to his favor. We'll see that in the next verse. But I think that the big question is less the question of how he managed to raise Shmuel, because I don't think he had any influence over raising Shmuel.
Shmuel raised himself.
Like we know that's clear.
We had a child.
We did not.
Careful, this is all on tape. Yeah?
We did not. We have an older son who said that child raised himself. Okay.
But the big question for Chofni Pinchas is how do you is Eli vis-a-vis Chofni Pinchas? That's really astounding. And that's the next piece. Eli is a ken ma'od. First thing we need to know about Eli,
he's a very old man.
And we're talking biblically.
Biblically, very old. He dies at the age of 90 something. So
that's not old.
Well, now it is. I mean, they're not. Yeah.
In this period of time, it's very old.
Oh, really?
After Moshe.
Shlomo Melech dies at the age of 50 something, 52. David Melech is 70, and that's already considered old. So we're not talking about the times of the Avos. We're talking about the time of Shmuel and David. Yeah. David HaMelech writes in Tehillim, Shnot Adam Shivim Shana Ve'im Begvorot Shmonim Shana. Average age of man was 70 years. If you were strong, it was 80 years. That's a separate conversation. Which take us off topic. Let's focus. Ve'eliza ken ma'od. He heard all that his sons had done to Bnei Israel. He knew, he had heard everything they had done to Bnei Israel. Ve'et asher yishkivun et hanashim hatzovot petach ol moed. Now,
wow.
I will translate that, but only, how does the article translate that? I'm just curious.
I'm curious, and that they would lie with the women
who gathered at the entrance of the tent of meeting. Uh-huh. I'm going to leave that statement
not
there out there.
Huh?
No, that is a literal translation.
Oh, okay.
I am going to leave that statement out there hanging for a moment, but just understand what the Navi has just indicted Eli's children Chofni and Pinchas for doing. Vayomar lehem, said Eli to his sons. So now we finally have a conversation between Eli and his sons. Lama ta'asun kadvarim ha'ele, my sons Chofni and Pinchas, why do you do this? Asher anochi shomea at divrechem ra'im me'it kol ha'am ha'ela. I hear terrible things about you from the people. Al banai, no, my children. Lo tova shmua asher anochi shomea ma'avirim am Hashem. This is not good, this rumor that people say about you, that you are mistreating the people of God. It's not a good thing for you. What we would say in modern terminology, it's pasnished. Right, you know what pasnish means?
Yeah.
I don't need to translate that,
no.
Right? Think about it, he says. Im yechta ish le'ish, if a person sins against another human being, so that's not so bad. Why? Ufilu lo Elohim. He can be judged by God, or he can pray to God. V'im la'Hashem yechta ish, But if a man sins against God, mit palelo, who's going to pray for him? To whom is he going to pray? To whom is he going to ask for forgiveness? For whom is he going to turn? You cut off your only hope for tshuva. Lo yishmu lekol avihem, they did not listen to this wonderful Musar Shmuz of their father. Now, the next four words, I'm going to put in parentheses. Ki chafetz Hashem la'mitam, put that in sagraim, put that in parentheses. I'll come back to it as a whole different discussion. But in all cases, the children didn't listen to Eli. No surprise. What does Eli say to them? Who has just heard, clearly he's heard, about how they're mistreating the people, how they're treating them as they're coming with the korbanot, how they're sticking their pitchfork into the cauldron, how they are treating the women, and I'm going to leave it at that for now. And he turns to them and he says,
cut it out.
No, that would be good. That would be good. If he would have said that, I would have been happy. I would have been happier. What does he say? No, he hasn't gotten to Shmuel. What does he say?
He says,
Albanai, no, my sons. These rumors aren't good. They're not good for you. You know, if you mistreat another human being, not so terrible. Why? Because you can always pray to God. But when you mistreat God, you mistreat the korban, you mistreat the avoda, so then you cut off your connection to God, then you have nobody to pray to. In other words, he says to them, if all I heard was that you were mistreating people,
you want them.
Big deal. Now you can pray to God and do tshuva, and bring another korban, klap achet and yom kippur. But you're mistreating the korbanot, right? You're turning the korbanot, you're violating the korban procedures. That means that you have nobody to turn to in prayer. And we're in avoda, so now you're in trouble. You understand that this is a complete perversion of...
You understand that this is a complete perversion
of the priority system of the Torah?
But that's why they turned out the way they did.
Right? If that's Eli, you understand what Chavni Pinchas Kohen Gadol. Correct. That I rest my case. He's the Kohen Gadol, and there's no surprise that from that becomes a Chavni Pinchas. The whole concept is perverted. It's 180 degrees in the wrong direction. The foundation of Torah, the foundation of the message of the Nevi'im was Lo Yadu Et Hashem means to mistreat others. Why? Not because they mistreated the korban, but because they mistreated
people.
What is he? He hasn't even mentioned the issue of the women. And this is Eli HaKohen Gadol. This is the, by the way, he's a shofet too.
Wow.
This is the shofet.
Wow.
Yeah, but you know, there were a lot of shofets that didn't do very well.
But
they weren't the Kohen Gadol.
Yeah, the Kohen Gadol is the bigger issue.
That was the problem, that they were both.
We're a decade away from the destruction of the Mishkan. You understand that this is a setup for the understanding of why this Mishkan is going to be destroyed. This is not to tell us
absolutely
how wonderful Eli was in his Musar Shmuz to his children. It's to give us a sense of how distorted Eli's message was to his children.
Explain their behavior.
Which would explain his behavior.
So you're saying he's part of the...
You miss what? Why it's corrupted?
Why
it's backwards?
What Eli said to his kids was so bad.
What's the basic halacha of Yom Kippur? Mitzvah penadam, we'll put it into halachic terminology.
Right.
Mitzvah penadam lechaviro. Yom Kippur's machaper?
Right. No.
No. Right. Why?
You go to church yourself.
Okay. What does Eli say? I'll put it in halachic terminology. Okay? If your chet has been adam lechaviro, not so bad. Why? Because there's always Yom Kippur to come and clap a chet. But if your chet has been adam lemakom, then there's nothing left because you cut yourself off from Yom Kippur.
It's just the opposite of what we say on Yom Kippur.
You understand? It's the exact opposite.
I understand what we have.
It's exact opposite. But Eli is saying is exact opposite of what the halacha is. It's the exact opposite of what all of Tanakh is about. What he's saying is, I don't care about benadam lechavero. Chavero, you can always pray to God and He'll forgive you. But benadam lemakom, you cut off your... If you sin against God, you cut off your option for tshuva because you cut off your source of prayer. So that's terrible.
Well, that's one way of looking at it. You could say...
Yeah, it's one way of looking at it, but it's not the Torah's way of looking at it. Right? It's not the Nevi'im's way of looking at it. It's not the Halacha's way of looking at it.
If
that's the way you look at it, you end up with the Chafni Pinchas who can treat people like dirt because Eli doesn't care.
But he's the Kohen Gadol.
He treated him that way. Maybe he wasn't as obvious about it.
You understand. This is part of the issue.
So
like going to confession.
I'm not even sure I know how to respond to that, so I'm just not going to respond to it.
But that may explain Ellie's initial response to Han.
Just remember that this is recorded and posted on the internet. Right.
This may explain. This may explain Ellie's initial response to Han when she came in, when she was praying. He thought she was drunk.
Ellie is certainly not presented to us in a positive light in any part of the story.
Pasuk Chavav,
correct. And wait, the next pasuk, Vahanar Shmuel, Holech veGadel vatov, Gamim Hashem, veGamim Anashim. In case you missed the subtlety here, Shmuel, Naar, Gadel vatov, Gamim Hashem, veGamim Anashim. Shmuel is the classic.
But he does it in the redemption
of the whole story, because his relationship with God is such where he is gadel v'tov, he's good both with God and with man. He's the exact opposite of everything Chofni and Pinchas represent. That's the contrast. That's the contrast set up in Pasuk Yud Aleph. That's the contrast set up at the end of Pasuk Yud Chet to Chav Aleph, and that's the contrast set up here. Every part of this story brings us back from Shmuel to Chofni Pinchas, from Chofni Pinchas back to Shmuel, from Eli back to Shmuel. The picture is one to frame the context in which Shmuel grows up. Now we're not finished.
Why would Hashem put Eli in this position as a Kohen Gadol?
Who said Hashem put Eli in this position as a Kohen Gadol? Kohen Gadol is a designated position. It's not political, yeah, but it's a process by which the Kohen Gadol was chosen. For the most part, it was hereditary, but it was a process by which it was chosen.
What's his name as a phrase? En chazon
nifra. We haven't gotten there yet. Okay. Where?
You just read it about Shmuel.
Really?
No. You're in the wrong place.
You're in the wrong place. Yeah. Morally in Bet.
You're in Perek Gimel. You're in Paragimel. That's a whole different conversation. We'll get there. Now.
But from a human point of view, this Shmuel really should have been traumatized. He's living in this terrible place.
I promise you we will address how Shmuel manages to grow up in such an environment.
Does anybody know that, I mean, this concept of Eli, why would Chana end up leaving Shmuel there?
We will come back to that question, too. You understand that this is...
Why would you leave him there if this was a concept that... Well,
Adina, understand, that's exactly why we went through this whole process first before going back to all our unanswered questions in Perek Aleph. I left Perek Aleph with a whole bunch of unanswered questions. Why does she want a child? Why does she leave this child in the Mishkan? Why does she leave him with Eli to grow up? We had all of these unanswered questions in Perek Aleph. We're going to come back to them all. But I said we're going to have to do Perek Bet before we can understand Perek Aleph.
Right.
So now... We'll come back.
Tell us what was known in the area, like how much people knew.
We're going to come back to the whole. So we will resolve the questions. We need that, but not today.
To hold that, we're not finished yet. As the Haftorah for Yom Kippur.
Perek Aleph, correct. Perek Aleph is the Haftorah for Rosh Hashanah, not Perek Bet. Perek Aleph, correct. Chana.
Right. It seems like
We will come back to all of this. We have not gotten to Chana yet. We will come back to Chana. We have only begun to discuss Chana. Right? Chana is clearly the heroine, the what's the female for heroine, right? Of the entire story. But we'll come there. Pasuk Chav Zayin.
Where was he? He's sitting
on his throne.
Yeah.
But he's old, so he doesn't really realize
he's
what's
sitting
going
on his kise. He's sitting on his kise is where
I know,
he is.
But it says
he's sitting on his throne.
And he heard. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's sitting on his throne.
He didn't see it.
Vayeshev Eli al kise. Vayavo ish elokim el Eli. Who is an ish elokim? Ish Elokim means
man of God.
A Navi. It's a term used for a man of God, term used for a Navi. Isha Elokim is synonymous with the Navi. Shmuel is too young at this point. Shmuel is still a child, so Shmuel is not yet the Navi of the people. But an Isha Elokim comes to Eli v'yomer Elav. Ko Amar Hashem. A nevuah that comes with the statement that begins with the phrase Ko Amar Hashem is either a nevuah of significant redemption or a significant indictment. Ko Amar Hashem means Paro's, Moshe said to Paro, Ko Amar Hashem. This is...
How many guesses do we get?
Yeah, exactly. Haniglo nigleitil beit avicha. B'yotam b'mitzrayim levet Paro. Years, generations passed. I revealed myself to your father's household in Mitzrayim, in the house of Paro. And I chose him. V'chorto mikol shiftei Yisrael din l'chohen. I chose him from amongst all the tribes of Israel to be my kohen. La'alot al-mizbechi, la'ktir ktoret, la'set ephod lefanai, to bring the korbanot, to bring the ktoret, to wear the ephod. I hand-picked your great-great-grandfather for this job. V'yetna levet avich et kol ishem bnei Yisrael. And part of the promise to him to be my servant, to serve loyally in the temple, was to give him the Ishei Hashem. What are the Ishei Hashem? Ishei bnei Yisrael? The Esh. That which is brought on the ash, that which is brought on the fire, the offering. Lama tiv'atu b'zivchi uv'minchati asher tziviti ma'on. Why have you dishonored, despised, kicked my offerings and my mincha? V'tchabed et banecha mimeni, and give more honor to your children than you give to me. L'avriachem mereshit kol minchat Yisrael la'ami. To fatten them up on the expense of the mincha of my people, of my of my children. L'cheinu um Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Amor amarti betcha uvet avicha yitachu lefanai ad olam. God says, I had said, I had promised, I had made a commitment that you and your household would walk before me for eternity. No longer. V'yata nu Hashem chalilali, says God. It is a desecration to me. Basically, God has said to him, God forbid.
Chalilu. You still use that today.
That's true. Ki mechabdai achabed. Those who honor me shall be honored. Uvazai yikalu. But those who despise me, who demonstrate this kind of bizoyan behavior, yikalu. They will be rejected. Hine yemim ba'im. I will, in the course of time, cut down your seed and the seed of your father's house. There will no longer be anybody who will reach old age in your household.
Wow.
There will be anguish, there will be pain. Never again will there be a zaken in your household. Cut them off, but they will die of young. You want a proof? I'll give you a proof that this klala, that this curse on your household is now taking hold from now into eternity. If your two children, Chofni and Pinchas, die in the same day, you know that this nevuah is coming true. I will replace them with a loyal kohen, who will follow my laws and follow my statutes. I will build for him a loyal household. Will walk before my anointed one all the days of his life. Those who will be left in your household, instead of being the Kohen Gadol and the Kohanim, to stand there with their pitchforks and stick them into people's cauldrons so they can have their steak dinners, they'll end up having to come and bow down to the Kohen Ne'eman, the loyal Kohen, who I will replace you with, Lagorat kesefi kakalechem, and beg for a handful of bread and for a coin stuck. They'll be out of work, or your children. from being the Kohen Gadol, and the Kohanim will have free reign, and they will be out of work and have to go beg for food. They'll beg to be connected to one of the Kohanim that will remain so that they can have a morsel of bread.
Pretty
if
harsh.
We wow. thought Eli's behavior was in a right, this is the nevuah of the Isha Elokim. This is what it comes to Eli, and it comes to Eli to indict him for Chofni Pinchas, for everything Chofni Pinchas did, with only one problem. Of all of the crimes of Chofni and Pinchas, of all the crimes attributed to them in this whole parak, the remarkable part of this parak is that although we have an indictment of their behavior, and there are several things that they have done wrong, in the statement of Eli to his children, and in the statement of the Navi to Eli, there's one missing. There's one crime of Chofni and Pinchas that's missing conspicuously from Eli's comment to his children and from the Navi's comments to Eli.
The women.
His treatment, the treatment of the women. This statement of Sheishkafuna Tanashim Atzavot Petach Omoed is not mentioned by Eli. Ahalbatzar. That it's not mentioned by Eli. But it's not mentioned by the Navi either.
Right.
That's a much bigger
problem.
But he
doesn't mention everything.
He mentions their whole mistreatment of the people. He mentions right. their treatment, right? He mentions the whole behavior in Perek. Remember how the structure, the Perek is structured. Perek, Sukkim Yud Gimel, Yud Bet, through Yud Zion, describes the Mishpat HaKohanim Et Ha'am, describes how they treat the people. And there it's all about the cauldron and the pitchfork and the korban and the tzli versus and the mebushal and the chai, right? Everything. Everything's about the korban and how they mistreated the people and used the pitchfork to decide to grab the meat. Then Eli comes into the picture and he hears all that his sons had done and the statement about laying with the women as they come into the entrance of the tent of Moed. Of the Mishkan. He criticizes them for how they treated the korban and how they treated the people. The Navi comes and criticizes Eli for his children's behavior, how they treated the korbanot and they treated the people. But nowhere in this, all of this criticism, is there ever again a mention of Ashish Kavunat Hanashim.
And that's not included in.
No, I would.
It
would seem to be.
Before.
It would seem to be much worse. It seems to be much worse. I mean, it's like somebody who steals $20 from the pushka and then kills you for it, and you hold them accountable for the $20 it took out of the pushka.
Right.
Where's the where? This is the Navi. I can't indict the Navi. I can indict Eli. I can talk about Eli's perverted priorities. That's not hard to see. But this is now in the words of the Navi. Now it's more complicated for us.
So the father in this case gets blamed very badly for the behavior of the sons.
Well, he's a Kohen Gadol. So he is accountable for his son's behavior. His son's behavior get it even worse, right? Eli is told that his lineage will be punished for Chofni Pinchas' behavior. It's like saying that Chofni Pinchas are going to be punished. Chofni Pinchas will die in the next parak.
Right.
We need to come back to this question. This question about the Shishkevu, this issue of their behavior of the women, vis-a-vis the women, is critical for us. It's critical for us to understand what they were doing, what the nature of the chait was, how it's relayed in the words of Eli and Chof and the Isha Elokim. And I'll already give you the advanced insight that our answer to the question of this pasuk is going to take us back to Perek Aleph and Tachana.
Perek Aleph where?
And Tachana.
Tachana.
Right? Because she's one of the women in the Beis HaMikdash, right?
Right.
So that whole piece, that's going to be our key to going back to Perek Aleph. That, Bezrat Hashem, will be next week.